Hello, I'm John Shane, and this is my first podcast. I'm a poet, author, musician, and teacher of creative writing. And during the years that Chogyal Namgay Norbu gave teachings, speaking in Italian, I often translated Rinpoche's teachings into English at many retreats in Italy and other parts of the world. I also worked closely for 4 years with Norbu Rinpoche writing the Crystal and the Way of Light, Sutra, Tantra, and Dzogchen for him, as well as translating from Italian into English a number of his other books, including Dzogchen, The Self-Perfected State. Later, I was a founding editor of the Mirror newspaper. I currently divide my time between working at my studio in England, where my family resides, and doing personal retreats at my old farmhouse in Tuscany, near Merigar on Monte Amiata. Open letter. Lettera aperta. Hello, this is John Shane. I'm going to tell you about the first ever international newsletter of the Dzogchen community that was sent out from the Namgay family apartment by Chogyal Namgay Norbu himself and me in July 1980, with artwork created by Chogyal Namgay Norbu using his 10-year-old son Yeshe's lino-cut printing set. In the early years of Chogyal Namgay Norbu's teaching, he didn't like to go to any kind of Dharma center, so when the community wanted to hold a retreat, a suitable place would need to be chosen to hold it. Sometimes retreats were held in tents, but sometimes a hotel or even a whole resort complex was rented for the duration of the retreat. In 1980, a retreat was held in the elegant Grand Hotel Montefeltro, located on a mountainside overlooking the Bay of Naples, Italy, with Mount Vesuvius visible in the distance, the other side of the bay. Those attending the retreat booked their own rooms. Meals were taken in the dining room with waiters in crisp white linen jackets serving us, and the teachings were given in the hotel ballroom. There was even a disco in the basement. This was certainly a different kind of location to any other retreat I had ever attended with my other Buddhist teachers, where everything had been more austere. During the retreat, as I stood one afternoon with Norbu Rinpoche looking out over the sunny garden, he turned to me and said, "John, John, do you see the Dakinis dancing?" When I asked him where they were, he laughed and pointed in the direction of the tall pine trees, waving in the wind, the other side of the manicured lawns. And he said, "There, there, don't you see them?" He continued laughing, making a big display of being surprised when I told him that all I could see was the trees. He was always full of fun and liked to joke with me and his other students, so I couldn't tell if he was simply comparing the movement of the trees to dancing Dakinis, or if he was telling me that there were actually Dakinis there that I should be able to see if I had the clarity to see them. But the whole conversation was very light-hearted, so I didn't feel too much of an idiot about not being able to tell what he meant. But then he suddenly became more serious, and looking me squarely in the eyes, he said, "At the end of the retreat, why don't you come and visit me for a few days at my apartment in Formia?" This was the last thing I was expecting, and I thanked him profusely, accepting his invitation, after which he said he would tell me at the end of the retreat how to get to his home. When, some days later, I arrived by train at the railway station in Formia, I was even more surprised to find Rinpoche himself waiting for me with his car, an old Citroën DS. As he drove me across the town, Rinpoche told me that I would be sleeping on the couch in the living room of the family apartment, and that he would himself be cooking a Tibetan specialty for dinner that evening. I had no idea why he had invited me to stay, but I felt really honored that he had, and the whole Namkhai family made me feel really welcome. Invited for a weekend, I ended up staying there for 6 months, sleeping on that sofa in the living room, and it was during that time that I began to work on creating with Rinpoche the book that became The Crystal and the Way of Light, Sutra, Tantra, and Dzogchen, which many people consider to have been the first book to introduce the Dzogchen teachings to a wide Western audience, and was certainly the first book to introduce to the world the story of Norbu Rinpoche's early life and education in Tibet. It's important to remember that before Norbu Rinpoche began to teach, Dzogchen was not taught openly, particularly to Westerners, but was kept as a reserved and secret teaching. And it was Norbu Rinpoche who opened the door that gave access to authentic Dzogchen teachings to the wider world. So the first book of his teachings to be published was very important in that regard. It not only brought many students to Norbu Rinpoche, it also provided an example of how authentic Dzogchen teachings could be presented outside the context of Buddhist monastic institutions to what we would call ordinary people in the West. I wondered later if, since Rinpoche already knew that I could write and taught creative writing, he had invited me to stay for the weekend as a way to open the possibility that I would work on a book with him. But there was never any indication at the time that that was what was in his mind. Anyway, whatever his intention in inviting me to visit his home, the work on The Crystal began while I was there. But as it turned out, it was to take 4 years of listening to dozens of hours of audio tapes of talks and reading every transcript of every teaching he had ever given to that date, and then continually rewriting the manuscript over and over again before I got the book into the form in which it was finally published. The full story of what happened as The Crystal was written will have to wait for another time. But another publication that can be considered a first was launched while I was actually staying with Rinpoche and his family at their apartment in Formia, the first ever international newsletter of the Dzogchen community, to which we gave the title Open Letter, a title accompanied by a Tibetan letter A, representing the primordial state of Dzogchen that one could describe as a state of total, complete openness. Remember that this newsletter was sent out at a time when the internet hadn't even been thought of, and there were no mobile phones and no desktop computers in every home. International communication at that time was only possible by sending letters through the post or by using a landline phone to make an expensive call. When we decided that it was time to try to put people in the community that was beginning to form around the world in touch with each other by mailing out a newsletter, I sat at the Namkhai family dining table with Rinpoche while we worked out what we wanted the newsletter to say, and then I wrote out by hand what we had decided on. After that, Rinpoche went to look for a lino-cut printing set belonging to his son Yeshe, and using the cutting tool, he carefully carved the illustrations for the newsletter into several rectangular pieces of brown linoleum, gently blowing away the little curls of lino that the cutting tool dug out. Then, while Rinpoche's wife Rosa and his son and daughter and I watched, Rinpoche squeezed black ink out of its silver metallic tube, spreading it onto a wooden board, after which he ran the roller over the board to pick up the ink and one by one coated the ink onto the rectangles of lino into which he had carved the letters and images he had imagined as illustrations for the newsletter. When the ink was fully spread, he laid out some sheets of white paper. And again, one by one, he slowly pressed each rectangle of lino down onto the sheets of paper. As Rinpoche tentatively lifted each of the rectangles of lino off the paper, the Namkhai family and I all clapped our hands and cheered, laughing with delight, as we saw the prints of the images he had created emerge in the black ink he had clearly stamped onto the white paper. After the ink had fully dried, we put the pages of the newsletter together, and the next day, while Yeshe and Yuden were at school, Rinpoche and I walked across the town to the local photocopy shop where we made several dozen copies of the open letter to send out by mail to community members all over the world in envelopes on which we would laboriously write out the names and addresses of the community members. As the wording of the content of the open letter reflects, at that time, Rinpoche was not in favour of forming centres or of creating an organisation. In fact, he often used to say that organisation was contrary to the teachings. And this view of his is not only reflected in the text of the open letter, it can also be seen reflected even more clearly in other documents remaining from that time, such as the brochures that were prepared and circulated to announce upcoming retreats, copies of which I still have in my archive. Other than permitting a small number of those printed brochures, Rinpoche would not, in those days, permit any advertising of any kind for his teaching or retreats, saying that advertising conditioned people and the Dzogchen teachings existed to free people from all conditioning. He said that people have to have a deep cause rather than a superficial cause of the kind that is created by publicity in order to come into contact with his teachings. In Dzogchen, he would say, you have to come out of all the cages with which society has imprisoned you and in which you have closed yourself up. His aim was to teach the essence of the Dzogchen teachings, which are the essence of Tibetan Dharma, and the free-form, structureless idea of how the community should be at that time was in harmony with that aim. Later, of course, as he always said he would do, he worked with circumstances to adapt to the changing conditions that arose as the community developed and grew in size after his books and his continual travels around the world to give teachings began to attract more and more students. But it seems clear to me that he didn't want to permit any structure or organization to be formed around him or any centers to be formed by his community until he was confident that he had enough students who had fully understood that all those material aspects that can surround the teachings themselves, the structure, the organization, and the centers, are not the principal things. It was only some years after the open letter had gone out, only after Rinpoche had made it clear to his students that the teachings are essentially not about structure and centers, that he began to consider founding a center. And even then, it's significant that he used the name Gar to define his centers. Gar being, of course, the Tibetan term for a temporary encampment of nomads rather than a permanently fixed place. This choice of a name was intended to remind everyone of what he said so often in the days when he would neither teach in centers of other Dharma groups or allow any centers to be founded in his name. The true center is the individual, he would say, but don't interpret those words in an egocentric way. What I mean is that in Dzogchen, the individual's own primordial state is the true center of the universe. Everything else arises from that center as the play of the energy of the primordial state. I will be writing more stories of my travels and work with Rinpoche, and it's my hope that the Mirror, of which I was a founding editor, will be able to publish some of them. But I have a lot of stories to tell, and as I'm getting old, there's less time left for me to tell them than there once was. So I'm planning to revive the open letter idea as a place online for me to publish my stories and to post podcasts of them for those who sign up to read or listen to them. Watch this space, as the saying goes. Those 6 months during which I stayed sleeping on the couch at the Namkai family apartment in Formia were back in the pre-internet, pre-home computer, pre-cellular phone days, long before Merigar was even thought of. And when he was at home, Norbert Rinpoche used to receive phone calls almost every day that came in from all over the world on a beige Bakelite Telecom Italia telephone that was plugged into the wall of the Namkai family living room with a long, black, curly wire. When the phone rang and Rinpoche picked up the receiver, he would often find himself speaking to someone who had either themselves just been given a diagnosis of some kind of serious illness, or who had had some accident, or who wanted to talk to him about some other person, perhaps a loved one who was caught up in a drama of physical or mental suffering of one kind or another. Listening to Rinpoche respond to these frequent calls asking for his help, and hearing the advice he gave as he answered the calls, I came to realize for the first time the weight of the responsibility he carried as a result of his having accepted the role of becoming the spiritual teacher of so many people. I, myself, didn't of course have the same kind of responsibilities Rinpoche had, but while I was staying with the Namkai family in Formia, I received a letter from a friend who led a Buddhist group back in England who was suffering from a serious illness, and inspired by the example of Rinpoche's compassionate responses to the people who phoned him. In my reply to my friend's letter, I wrote this poem. For Marla Young, a Dharma sister, dying of cancer. 15th May, 1980, Formia, Italy. Written at the private apartment of the Dzogchen master Chogyal Namkhai Norbu, while staying there as a guest. Bodies are failing things, Mala. Always overcome by time. And yet body, form, and matter are but grosser forms of mind. Freedom is hard fought for and hard won. Truth is often bitter, answers often paradoxes, questions seldom won. Surrendering seems easy, as long as we can hold a little something back. The body is a vehicle, yet when it gets weak, our fear makes our vision black. Death and darkness are not easy things to face. Each stands alone, in this is nothing new. Yet each alone is also fully part of all around. Mala, none of this is news to you. Searching for an independent self, none can be found. All is impermanent, all interpenetrating. Mind is essentially free. Only our conditioning ties us down, preventing us from being all that we could be. But these are only words. each one of them a liar. These are only words, and your pain is like a fire. Yes, it burns, but its burning is like a purifying flame. There is no need for any sense of guilt. There is no blame. Your cancer is not a cause for shame. Fire, needing darkness to show light, flows upwards in the river of the night. Brave sister, proud lioness, defender of the Dharma, in the dancing dream of life, your song is singing true. Even though at times your sickness may seem to be undoing you, unfolding itself at the same time, in-breath and out-breath, weaves the way between life and death. We're always afraid of the unknown somehow. But there's nowhere to go, Mala, because it's always here and now. And I wanted to send you my love and sympathy of angels. And of course, words won't do. But words are all I have to send. And so, I send them to you. So now I'm going to tell you about the actual open letter that was sent out and describe it a bit, and then I'll read what the open letter actually said. The first page of the open letter has a Tibetan letter R in calligraphy by myself, by me, and then it says, open letter, lettre aperte, lettre ouverte, from Formia, July 1980. And there's a small photo, black and white photo, of Chogyal Namkhai Norbu that was taken at the Campo Molino retreat. And he's sitting with a scarf around his neck. In the background, you can see a tent, because that retreat was held in tents. And he has a kind of teacup beside him. That's the front page of the open letter. Then when you go to the central page, it has a Tibetan letter R again at the top, and the words, open letter, Formia, July 80. The idea of this open letter is simple. It's to encourage communication between members of the community all over the world. It's not an official magazine or newspaper. There's no editor, and no particular person is responsible for it other than you, or me, or any member of the community anywhere who wants to send news or of his or her point of view to other members of the community. The open letter is, in fact, open to all. It need have no fixed format and can be any shape or size or any design. Now, we've used a photocopying machine for this one simply because that was what available to us here in Formia at the time, and because we knew that, of course, photocopying machines are available everywhere else in the world too, so that you in France, in England, in Austria, in Italy, in India, in Kathmandu, Nepal, or Australia, in California, in New York, or wherever you are, can put together an open letter and send it to other members of the community, both in your own country and internationally. This particular open letter is to set the ball rolling, an open initiative that perhaps no one will take up, but nevertheless, the possibility is there. The artwork and calligraphy, except for the front page, is by Norbu Rinpoche himself, who lino-cut the designs on the rear and centre pages on a plastic sheet in his apartment at the right moment. Bön on the rear page means Tibet in Tibetan, and in the center page thread he has carved Communitat Dzogchen in Western script, Tibetan, Burmese, and around these words he's written the addresses of some members of the community in various parts of the world. These people whose addresses are there are of course not official representatives or anything like that. We all know that that limited organizational way of doing things is not the way our community works. But these addresses may serve to begin to enable an open letter to be circulated and to increase communication between us all as we develop our vision of the community, entering the practice as individuals all over the world and letting our energy flow together. To enter this communication more fully, any of us, anywhere, can write what is happening in his or her part of the world in his or her mandala, adding maybe useful addresses, maybe, for example, where yantra yoga is taught, or news of retreats, or other events. How the open letter is set out on the page is up to you. It doesn't have to be elaborate or arty, just however you feel. Then it can be photocopied or printed or whatever you will, and sent out to all the people in this open letter and to anyone else you feel may be interested. Overcoming obstacles, overcoming barriers, overcoming limits, we can open to each other across the frontiers of time and place, winging words to one another to bring us all face to face, though separated in different parts of the world, yet united in the self-perfected mind, the seamless web of primordial space. Okay, so that's it for the first podcast by John Shane for The Mirror. I hope you will have enjoyed it and that we haven't made too many mistakes. We're learning as we go along. And if you have any thoughts you'd like to share, please send them to me. I'd be very happy to hear from you. So thank you very much. This is John Shane saying goodbye for now.